We call it doing work on the edge. So you're like on the edge of things, and it's scary on the edge. That's where a lot of the magic happens, and a lot of like new perspectives, and you can like reprogram yourself to think differently about stuff.
The fear of failure is probably the number one thing that holds people back.
Yeah.
And to try without that fear is super vulnerable. Yo! Hey, hey, welcome to another episode of Be Rad, the podcast. I'm your host, Kat.
Hey, how's it? I'm Carson. I produce the show.
And together, we're a team.
Boom.
Nux, baby.
Teamwork.
Teamwork. On this episode, we had Zach Friedley, who is an adaptive athlete for On. He was born with one leg and has since made it his mission to make trail running more accessible to adaptive athletes. He's run super prestigious races like OCC by UTMB. And he did that as an example to show that this is possible. His journey has just been so inspiring. You know, he wasn't always a trail runner. He's always been an athlete, and it's always been on his mind to inspire other adaptive athletes to show them that it is possible.
Yeah, thinking about the challenges that this guy's had to overcome to accomplish what he has is pretty mind-blowing. And thinking about these races that he competes in, he seems to have an iron will.
Yeah, they're gnarly races.
And, yeah. You know,
and, you know, he found trail running through his own spirituality, and he found how to push his own limits and his purpose to show other people what he can do and what's possible, not only for adaptive athletes, but for anyone who has a dream.
Yeah, it's so inspiring. And I thought he was an awesome guy. Seems true to his heart, and I really like that about him.
I know you'll enjoy the episode, and thanks to our sponsor, Delta G, we just signed another contract with them, and I'm so stoked.
Woohoo!
Yeah. It's super exciting when you can partner with a brand that you truly believe in. I was just talking to my friend Jonathan. Both of us were diagnosed with ADHD when we were kids and heavily medicated. For me, it was like around 10. I'm not sure with him, but we were just talking about how Delta G is kind of the first product that isn't ADHD medication that makes us feel engaged in the same way. You know, I choose not to take medication because there's some side effects that I don't love. And also it's a banned substance in sports. So I don't want to train with something that I'm not going to race with. And Delta G is one of those things that helps me hone in my chaotic brain. You know, Carson will tell you it's like chaos up in here. And it does help to have a tool that I can turn to when I need a little bit of extra focus.
Yeah. Even as somebody who, you know, I've kind of had symptoms of ADHD a little bit, but I don't have a long history of doctors prescribing me medication for it, but it's hard for me to focus also. I feel like most people, it's hard to focus in 2024 with so much stimuli all around us at all the time, and there's so much input, right? And it's really hard to sort of sit down and focus, but Delta G sort of removes some of those ADHD symptoms for me, and I'm able to sit down for a long period of time and really focus on the task at hand. So it's almost like a overflow of mental energy that you're able to, you know, bring into whatever job you're working on at the time.
One might even say flow state.
Wow, yeah. It kind of does feel like flow state.
Yeah, it totally does, especially with my work. Something that's hard for me to get, to get started on.
Yep.
Well, thanks again, Delta G. So excited for this partnership. And if you're interested in trying some ketones, shoot us a comment on Instagram or let us know if you have any questions, and check out the ketone quiz in the show notes.
All right. Thanks, Delta G. Enjoy the podcast, everybody.
Woo-hoo, enjoy the podcast.
Amen.
All right. Well, welcome to the Be Rad podcast.
Thanks.
I'm your host, Kat, and with me, I've got Zach Friedley, adaptive athlete, self-proclaimed trailblazer, born without his right leg and on a mission to make trail running more accessible. I ask this question with everyone because, you know, that's just what the internet tells me.
Yeah.
How would you describe yourself to the community?
Probably pretty chill. I live in Northern California.
Nice.
In the Redwoods next to the ocean.
Wow, amazing.
So it's like real remote. I like to, even though I travel the world and race, I like to be home a lot and peace and quiet. I like to advocate for my community and basically use my platform to make things better.
Yeah. And what does better look like for you?
More opportunities in general for the disabled population.
Mm-hmm.
Trail running, of course, but just in general, kind of making it less taboo to have disabled people included in things. And I think running kind of is a way for me to build that out to the population. And it's like an easy entry point into talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Specifically trail running, which is like a whole, it's not just running. Yeah. There's like a whole another set of obstacles there.
Totally.
So tell me about, you know, I don't usually ask this question because it's so broad, but for you, I'm sure your story is very unique. And so tell me about your running journey. Like, where did it start? Yeah. How did you get inspired?
Yeah.
Why trail running? And what do you love about it?
Yep. So these are great questions. Running, I've always been a part of running. Growing up as a kid, it was like in sports. So I was on the wrestling team. We would run for conditioning and I hated every second of it. Then like football, you know, so my entry to running was for punishment or cardio or something. So that was like all the way through high school. I graduated high school and then I got my first running blade a few years later in this like obscure way. I had like a problem with my prosthetic, went to a prosthetics place. They fixed the problem and said, hey, while you're here, have you ever tried a running blade? So I put a running blade on and was running up and down this hallway, and it was like somebody threw the keys to a Mercedes or a Lamborghini to a kid, and my body was like moving in a way that I never felt. So that was like an entry into, okay, I'm gonna start to run. And I tried to make a Paralympic team, Beijing, London, and kind of had like hopes of Rio, but like called it in like 2014. Thought I would never run again in my life. Put the blade in like a box. Started traveling the country, looking for something like what is success and just kind of like self-discovery. Did a lot of work with like a shaman, went to India, did some stuff, and then kind of fell in love with having a human body, and my body moves in its own unique way. And I was living in Mendocino, there's trails, there's ocean, there's not a lot of people, and I just wanted to move. And so I opened the box up, pulled out the old blade, hooked it up, started running on these beaches and like just doing, like just moving my body with no objective of running a mile or 2 miles, just moving. And that would end up being hours and hours. Then I broke that leg. I was on crutches for like a year, really trying to network or navigate the healthcare community because I was privileged in my whole life getting prosthetics. And then when I went off grid, I didn't realize how privileged I was until everything was gone. I didn't have a leg and people were telling me it was going to cost me $20,000-$30,000. I even got kicked out of a prosthetics like shop once because they were like, do you have any money? And I said, no. And they said, well, you can't be here. You have healthcare. I said, no. They're like, yeah, we're not doing handouts here. So I'd leave. But I eventually got the leg I needed to run and ended up at Born to Run 2019 to hand out coffee. And somehow Lewis talked me into running 10 miles and my life changed that day.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack here. <There's a> lot. I should have taken notes. So first, I want to hear about this trip to India a little bit because that's not something that you hear very often, especially in the professional running space, is that you went to India, met with a shaman.
Yeah.
What are some of those lessons? Well, first, how did you end up there? What was the catalyst that you were like, I need to go talk to a shaman? And then what was that experience like and how did it change you?
So I met my shaman in how can I describe this? In my community back home in Mendocino. So his name's Fred Mittauer. He's been practicing transformational body work for 50 years. And he's got a practice at his home in the Redwoods where you're on a table, not like a traditional massage, but you're like working on your body and we hold like traumatic events in our like tissues and stuff. And I somehow wrote him an email randomly, because I saw like a video that he did, and I was just was like, this called to me. I think I need to see you. I don't know why. And I ended up at his house. We started talking about life. Next thing you know, I'm on this massage table. He's working through my body, 2 hour long like sessions. And I just remember feeling lighter afterwards and just different, new perspectives. Like all the rules that I knew about life started to basically go out the window.
Wow.
And through that process, I became more open, more curious about life. And that's how I ended up in India. Because seeing him doing the work, I think I started seeing him in like May of 2017. I went to India June of 2018.
Okay.
And I'm from the Midwest, super raised in like a super conservative family. You know, like in Kansas City, Missouri, where it's just you go to work 9 to 5. I just never thought that I was going to, I just didn't seem right. Like I felt like there was more to do, but I don't know how to do it. So going and seeing Fred and doing that work just basically helped me manifest who I wanted to be in life.
That's amazing. And I'm still so curious about this experience. So you went to this guy and were you feeling physical pain that was likely a manifestation of trauma?
Yeah, but I think it was my baseline, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
So my body, your body holds on to everything.
Yeah.
And I just remember being on the table. So I was born missing my leg above the knee. I hop around. I'm really in touch with my body. Like if my leg is too tall by a millimeter, I can tell. If something is off, I can tell. So I feel like I'm really tapped into my body. And after a session with him, I'll never forget, my leg is like in the corner of the room. We've been working for 2 hours. And I went to hop to go get it. And I thought I was going to hop through the ceiling.
Wow.
I was just like, whoa, what the hell? And we go and we kind of do a debrief in his studio. And he's like, how do you feel? And I'm like, well, I thought I was going to hop through your ceiling. And he basically was like, well, you had all this like karmic shit on your body. We just removed about 50 pounds. So it's no wonder you feel lighter. But you held on to a lot of stuff like on your hip. And I opened you up there and like opened up other parts of your body. And yeah, I just kept coming back for more. And my body started to change. I felt strong in my body. I felt comfortable in my body. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't like running because I looked weird. You know, you'd see your like classmates running. You're like, I don't look like that. I don't want to run and have people see me look weird. You know, so I never was drawn to it. So now in my 30s, I don't give a shit what I look like. I move how I move.
Yeah.
Just to see how far I can go. So that's
kind of
how
so amazing. And it's so interesting to think, and like, you never want to look at what ifs, but you have to look and like, you know, you tried to make so many Olympic teams and it's easy to see that like, wow, maybe that fear was, it wasn't your fitness that was the limiting factor. It was that fear.
Totally.
Of how you looked.
Totally.
That's so amazing. So, you know, I just want to distill this experience that you had, and you know, this is totally off notes right now, but if you could just tell everyone like one thing that you took away from that experience that might be applicable to, you know, someone trying something hard or dealing with stuff.
Yeah, my best advice is to be kind to yourself.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Cool. So you do this experience in India, and then a couple years later, you find yourself at Born to Run selling coffee.
Yeah.
And so you were working for a coffee company and you were just a vendor there?
No. So when I went to India, I actually lived in an ashram for like a month.
Okay.
I wasn't on vacation. I went to this place called Hardwar, and there's an ashram there. And I basically shadowed a monk there who was in his 90s, and he meditated multiple times a day, and that's all he did. We just woke up, meditated, ate some food, meditated more, ate a little bit more food, meditated, went to sleep when the sun went down, got up before the sun got up, meditated. You didn't know if it was Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or like December 1st or December 2nd. You just did this thing. So time flew, and that really opened me up for wanting to do more with my life. Like, how can I use my energy to impact others? So I started a nonprofit called Mendocino Movement Project. And I came home with this idea to basically provide prosthetics in India. I was like really aiming for the big, like I went big and I was like, we're going to go to India. We're going to do prosthetics. I want to talk about movement. Movement's so important. And luckily in my community, there's this coffee company called Thanksgiving Coffee. And the founder of that is a friend of mine. And he's like, well, let's make a coffee for your cause. And then you can go have coffee anywhere in the world, have the coffee bag there. People are like, oh, hey, what is that? And you start talking about your project or your a mission. And somehow I connected that with Born to Run. Yeah. I'm like, oh, these people love running and these people love movement. Let's go do this thing. And I'll give coffee to all the runners in the morning. And I get there on like a Thursday, and Friday signed up for the 10 mile, ran the 10 mile Saturday morning, never run further than 3 miles. Yeah, it was wild. And at the time, I'd never seen a person with a blade on a trail. And I remember asking Lewis, like, hey, are you sure this is okay? Like, I've never seen anybody do this. And Lewis was like nonchalant, like, yeah, man, like, if you can't do it, we'll just pick you up on the motorcycle. Because, you know, coming from the background of running at like the Paralympic level, you wouldn't go run 100 meters unless you knew you could run 100 meters.
Yeah.
You know, so like I was taking, my approach was so like intense. I'm like, I don't know, like if I should be doing this. I've been trained for this. Everybody's just like, yeah, just go do it. And I did it.
Yeah.
And my life changed. You know, like it was all these emotions came through my body. I was crying, unexpected, like, holy cow. Like I just did this. We got to tell everybody in the world that if you're disabled, you can run trails, because it's way more magical than running repeats on a track or, you know, just that vibe. And I was just really excited to start telling people.
Yeah.
And here we are now, and 5 years later, and, you know, I have my event at Born to Run called Born to Adapt, and Lewis has helped me create an event to get more awareness out there and get more people on the trail. So it's come like full circle.
Very cool. So you're a race director then?
I'm a race director.
Wow. That's a fast progression. Yeah, it is. India 2018 to ultra runner and race director by 2023, 5 years.
Yeah,
that's not a lot of time. So through all of this, what inspired you to run yourself? I know Lewis said to do it, and it's hard to say no to Lewis. When I was 21, almost got "fuck you, Lewis" tattooed on my calves at Born to Run. So it's hard to say no to him sometimes. But how? But what inspired you after to grow this to a career? Your race director to to run the ultra distance. You know, 10 miles alone is far.
Yeah.
Let alone racing across the French Alps and Chamonix for 100 miles.
Well, I only did MCC, which is
okay.
40K. So, like, my Strava said I did 35 miles. So, I tell people, according to Strava, I ran 35 miles through the Alps.
But did you start UTMB?
No.
Oh, okay.
MCC on Monday.
Oh, okay.
In the rain. The day that it rained and it was muddy.
Brutal.
That was my day.
Brutal conditions. And MCC is rough.
It was tough.
Yeah.
Especially with the rain, the snow, and the mud. But, yeah, how did I get inspired? I don't even really know. It just kind of... I came back from Born to Run and I wanted to explore the world. I had never really thought of myself as a person that could go into like Yosemite and go 20 miles on a trail or 10 miles. So I started to find these places to go run, and then COVID happened and I was training at home on our trails in Mendocino, signed up for another Lewis event in Quincy, California. And then signed up for like Lake Sonoma 50 and Zion 55K. I started doing all these things. And in these events, I was the only person there with a blade. And I was just kind of blown away that this wasn't advertised to my community, because I know a lot of athletes. And I'm like, man, you guys would really love this. Like, trust me, this is like really fun. You get to explore the world in a way that maybe you didn't know was possible and see like really cool stuff. And just kind of started chasing that. And next thing you know, I'm professionally sponsored and running all over the world. It just kind of happened quick.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard when you have these opportunities and it's hard to say no to them.
I believe too. I just believed in something bigger than myself, and I just kind of followed it. Even though there wasn't real like a clear path forward, I'm pretty sure there's not too many above knee. So I'm missing my leg above the knee. I don't know if there's anybody else sponsored in the world that's above me, which is insane. So there's not like a clear path. Like, you know, like you have like all these athletes sponsor that run marathons and like Western States, but there's not a lot of opportunity for my community in that world. So luckily I partnered with On, who saw the potential, and we're trying to like shift the paradigm. So maybe next year or the year after, you start to see more athletes like me out there, mm-hmm. sponsored by big brands. That's my goal at TRE, honestly, is start talking to other other companies, say, hey, like, let's get some adaptive athletes sponsored. How can I help you do this?
Amazing. So, you know, I want to go back to UTMB for a minute and talk about your experience at MCC. And as we talked about, there's a unique set of challenges for adaptive athletes, and one of my teammates at Brooks is an adaptive.
Brian.
And he attempted Leadville this year, and you know, he might have finished if it weren't for some of those unique challenges that aren't in place in Leadville to accommodate adaptive athletes. It was a fight to get him a pacer for, you know, for you know, the last 70 miles or something, you know, so we ran like, you know, some technical trails without a pacer. And so what were some of those barriers by UTMB, and how can races do better to be inclusive to adaptive athletes?
Well, for starters, I think the education needs to happen for the volunteers. So these people are just trying to do the best they can. And if they don't know, if they've never seen somebody with a blade come running through, and they just don't know. Like, they don't have the education to, like, help us out.
Are those things that they need to do to help you out?
Well, part of them is I'm okay.
Yeah.
Like I don't need you to be like, oh, my God, like, you shouldn't be out here. What are you doing? Or, oh, my God, you're never going to make the next cutoff. Or just, like, really concerned. And I know it comes from a place of caring, but it does hinder you in a race situation.
Totally.
Like for me, for example, I was at checkpoint Col des Baumes, which is like where France and Switzerland is the border. It's like a pass. It was super intense conditions up there, 80 mile an hour winds, snow, massive mud. I made the cutoff under the cutoff by 10 minutes. Before I even left the aid station, they were like, hey, you got to go 10K. To the next checkpoint, you're not going to make it. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm actually feeling pretty damn good right now. Better than I did at the beginning of the race. I was like excited to be at the halfway point. It's downhill from here. And they were just basically like, you know, concerned that I wasn't going to make it. Mm-hmm. And so I was dealing with that. Even to get the pacer was a challenge. Nobody knew that I even had a pacer. People at bid pickup told me I was going to get disqualified if I ran with my pacer. Just crazy stuff like that, you know. And then they ended up pulling course markings out for me. I had to navigate the last 10K without markings. There's just no communication.
They pulled out race markings.
Yep. So when I'd been working with UTMB for over a year. So I ran MCC in 2022, and I didn't make the first cutoff. I was late by like 30 minutes. So they kicked me out of the race. And from that moment on, I started to have meetings with UTMB, multiple meetings, Zoom calls. My management team was on these calls. We gave them a plan, a three-year plan on how to include adaptive athletes, what needs to happen. I was going to help them push these things over the finish line. So we had like really good progress. Well, a month before UTMB, they ghosted me. They didn't respond to any of my emails. Because there was questions. It's like, all right, we discussed all these things that we're going to do. How are we going to do it? Like, I was asking, how is my pacer going to have a bib? Is he going to have a wristband? Are the people at the aid station going to know that he exists? Are they going to know that I exist? Are they going to try to kick me off the course? Like, there's so many questions. And they just didn't respond to us. They didn't respond to me, some other athletes. So there was a lot going into the event that was unknown. And then, of course, bib pickup. Nobody knew. They were very angry that I even said I was going to have a pacer. Because, you know, UTMB, like, there's no pacers. So they're like, what? Like, you're basically disgracing the event You know, how dare you think you can have a pacer? And I pull out old emails and I'm like, look at this email. And they're like, oh, yeah, we know that person, but nobody ever told us. We don't know what to tell you, man. So I started undoing or pulling out papers from the like packet, and then pulls out a guide bib. And I showed them. They're like, oh, the guide bib. Nobody knew, you know.
That's crazy.
So we got that figured out. And then some of the other accommodations. So for MCC, there's 10-hour cutoff. Mm-hmm. They were going to give me the entire 10 hours to run the entire thing. So if I missed like Argentina checkpoint by like 15 minutes and there were still 2 hours left in the race, they were going to give me the 2 hours to finish, because I can go really fast on the ups. I can go really fast on flat. But when it comes to the descent, I got to take my time a little bit differently, which doesn't mean like I'm in bad shape or I can't continue. I just have to slow down to be kind of careful. But I can make up time on flats. And this year at Argentier, I missed a cutoff by 10 minutes. And all my teammates on the ground said that they saw other runners who also didn't make the cutoff that were allowed to continue. But then I got there and they were like, no, you're done. And we had people on the phone from like the team talking to the UTMB office. They're like, oh no, Zach is supposed to get the whole 10 hours. He's good. But nobody at the aid stations knew this. So I'm 30K into this thing. I don't need to be like advocating for myself in an aid station when I'm trying to make this thing happen, you know?
Yeah.
So that's going on. They tried to cut my bib. And I remember it's on camera. We have a video that hasn't been released yet, but it's like them like coming out with the scissors. And I just remember seeing the scissors coming towards me in like slow motion. I remember thinking like, oh shit. And I like threw my watermelon down on the ground and just bolted off into the trail with my pacer. And then from that moment on, we saw them pulling the flags out of the ground. So I had to navigate myself from Argentier to Chamonix. We got lost because, as you know, there's like trails everywhere.
Yeah.
So we're like going this way and this way. And like, I'm trying to like figure it out on the map. My brain's fried because we've been out here for 8 hours and it's been raining and snowing the whole time, but we made it to Chamonix. After the cutoff, but they ended up reversing my like disqualification, and I'm an official finisher of MCC.
Wow.
But there was things that I had to deal with that, like, if running a mountain in the Alps isn't hard enough, let's go ahead and give this guy who's got one leg more shit to work through out there.
I mean, just the time alone to talk your way out of the aid station. So
there's a little bit of improvement. My only thing is they had all the info. It wasn't like they didn't have, like the first time I went there, fine.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know. No one's ever been there with a prosthetic to do this. They didn't know. This year there was no excuse. They had all the information. We worked together and they just kind of dropped the ball. So my trust in how they're going to do things moving forward isn't there.
Well, it's a work in progress. So are you still working with UTMB, even if you might not be running MCC next year, to make these improvements?
I am not working in the capacity as I was the years last year.
Yeah.
Because it was all free work, you know.
Totally.
They didn't pay me any money. And I just, my time's valuable. And I don't want to sit around and have the same conversations we had last year for the same result. So
yeah.
I'm still available. If they want to make it happen, I'm not going to like try to push it forward anymore. And I'm actually going to race a Golden Trail Series in 24.
No way. That's so cool. Oh, so you're working with Greg then?
Not yet.
Okay.
but I've talked to Tim Tollefson.
Cool.
So we're going to do something at his event. And I mean, it's more enticing for me to work with a group where you don't know what's going to happen with the outcome.
Yeah.
I feel like I already kind of know what's going on with UTMB, and maybe one day they will be there.
Yeah.
But right now I'm like ready to hit things that we can make a difference. And it seems like at least with Golden Trail, me and Tim are going to whip up something cool.
So awesome.
And it might catch on to the other events, but who knows?
Tim is the perfect person to work with on that. He's so...
I'm excited.
Yeah. He's so wants to make the trail running space better.
Yeah.
You know?
He reached out to me. I was on a panel at the U.S. Trail Running Conference, and he was the moderator, and we, like, did this thing, and afterwards he was like, dude, he's like, let's talk. Like, I got a race.
So
we can
cool.
make something happen. So
cool. So what are those things that you're going to see at Tim's race at Mammoth Trail Fest?
Yeah.
Which race are you doing there?
Well, so I think I might do, like, the 28K. I don't know that. So I don't know if his dates are going to be conflicting. I'm committed to climbing Chimborazo in Ecuador next year, which is like a 6,200 meter peak with a group called Romp. It's a whole other project I'm involved in that provides prosthetics to people in Ecuador. So it's like my passion. So I don't know if those are going to conflict, but I'm going to set it up for Tim anyways, if, even if I can't come. We're definitely going to keep the course markings for everybody. So we're going to do that. Hopefully I can get like Ultra Sign Up or one of the race hosts to change the way they intake athletes. That's like the starter. So when you go to sign up, you're like male, female, non-binary, your age, but we need to have it to where you can select if you're an adaptive athlete and like what category you're in. And my like idea is to use paratriathlon, which is an endurance sport for adaptive athletes, and there's five categories. So we could just basically take what they have and plop it right over to trail running and see if it works.
Wow, so
that's
cool.
That's what
I mean, that sounds... I actually coach the guy who's doing all the web design and the, or what's it called, the he's gonna kill me,
like it's the like back end,
the back end, yeah. Computer
for stuff Ultra Sign Up,
for Ultra Sign
Up. I need
up,
to know so. This guy.
Yeah, I'll put you guys in touch.
Yeah,
he's awesome, and he's so like Tim, he just wants to do good for the sport.
Yeah,
shout out Jonathan Throne.
Jonathan, I need to talk to you.
Yeah,
man.
he's awesome. I'll put you two in touch. But so, and then what are some other things that you're working with Tim?
We're going to just have like education, maybe cutoff times, stuff that would be enticing for somebody maybe to jump into the race, you know, and just kind of see and not be afraid to make a mistake.
Totally.
You know, like that's the thing is like, hey, at least try and make a mistake and then we can fix it. You know, if you don't try, I mean, then that's like the mistake in itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. And then Tim is someone that, you know, I understand not wanting to continue to work with UTMB, but I think Tim, I mean, if Tim makes mistakes even after working with him, I know he'll be wanting to fix them.
I mean, I've made a mistake on my own events for Born to Adapt.
Yeah. You know? What are some mistakes that you made?
My first year, I didn't have an accessible porta potty and I invited people in wheelchairs. Like rookie mistake. and that's, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the thing. You just figure it out. Like you want to do good. You're going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
And you get the feedback. And I got feedback from my friend, Sean Wall's mom. So Sean is a sixth grader now. He was a fourth grader then, but she was like, Zach, hey, great event. Awesome. But dude, we didn't have any accessible toilets for our son. And I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like, obviously, we changed that for this year. Mm-hmm. But just things like that. You know, you take feedback. You ask for feedback. You know, you're just in touch with the community and see what they need.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the whole thing is, like, communication. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what lacked with UTMB is the communication just stopped. And it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm actually not that surprised, but crazy nonetheless and not cool. So, you know, I'm so interested in your relationship with On, and how did you get in touch with Dave Kilgore?
It's an awesome story.
Cool.
So December of 2021, I quit my full-time job to pursue running full-time with no sponsors. And I just had this dream in my brain that existed. And I started talking with some brands that I will not mention. And we had some negotiations happening. And I was going to sign with another brand.
Did you have representation at this point?
I did.
Nice.
Yeah. And which helps out a lot.
Yeah.
Especially the group that represents me represents disabled talent across the board. So like people like influencers and people in films and athletes. So they have like a really good knowledge of that space. Whereas like sometimes when you come to the table as a disabled athlete, you're not treated the same. And it's really good to have somebody witnessing that and be like, no, you got to come to this line, you know, because it's sometimes hard to advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
But luckily, I have really good representation. And yeah, so this is 2022. My friend Jordan, who runs Rising Hearts, she goes by Jordan Whetstone. She just got married. I always say Jordan Daniels, but Jordan Whetstone. I think her Instagram is like native in LA.
Yeah, I know her actually.
So we're on a panel together tomorrow.
Cool.
So she and I had this conversation, and I was telling her about this like interaction I was having with this brand. I was like really kind of disappointed. And I was like, man, Jordan, like, I can't believe like this is how things are going down. What do you think? She's like, oh, let me put you in touch with On. And I'm like, who is On? I never heard of On. Like, I had to like search him on Google. And like the next day, I talked to somebody in Zurich. They're like, they basically said, Zach, what are you looking for? So I told them my like dream. And they were like, oh, I think you need to talk to David Kilgore. So then like the next day, me and Kilgore have a call. And me and Kilgore are really good friends now. But at the time, I didn't know who he was. So it's funny to tell the story. And he paced me at MCC. So we spent a lot of time racing around the world together. And I told him basically my dream. And he was like, yeah, man, like, I love it. Like, he wasn't like, oh, that doesn't fit our, we don't have this or this doesn't exist. He was like really stoked on it. And I remember getting off the call and being like, well, I really freaked this guy out. Where we really vibed really well. And obviously it was the latter. And they basically sent me a contract like the next day. And me and my manager went over it and like made some adjustments to it that fit a runner like me. You know, like I can't go win Western States because there's no category for me, or I can't go win UTMB. So when it comes to podiums and bonuses, there's nothing really there because the thing doesn't exist yet. So they were really flexible on that, and they just basically let me construct my own box. And now we've been working together for almost 2 years, and I'm hopefully re-signing by the end of the year for the next 5 years.
So cool. That's amazing.
It's been fun, and we create products. They support my Born to Adapt events. They put me in the places I need to be, like TRE and other places around the world. We went to Ghana this year. I did a running clinic there. They just really put me in the position to be able to do the things that are important.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Kilgore's a good guy.
Kilgore's awesome. Yeah. We have so much fun together.
So cool. So what are some, you know, trail racing and ultra running in general, it's hard. Like, it's really hard.
It is hard.
But, you know, some of the challenges, and there's this really awesome study that was, I forget where I read it. I think I read it in one of Matt Fitzgerald's books. And it was, so I'm going to butcher it, but it was the people who are most successful in athletics have some degree of struggle when they're young.
Yeah.
And the people who, and it might not be like, there's like a, basically a threshold. If it's like way too much struggle, usually, it's not, they're less likely to succeed. But with a degree of serious hardship as children, it produces great athletes.
Yeah.
Usually. You know, you have grown up with some unique challenges. And what are some of the unique strengths that you bring to trail running that, you know, I might not experience, that your normal trail runner might not have those strengths?
Yeah. I feel like adversity is there like the whole time. You know, like I'm managing, what I've realized is running with a blade and these things, I'm managing the normal stuff that you manage as a trail and ultra runner, but then you add on like 15 other things that I'm also managing. And I think just growing up this way, you know, I've been addicted to sports since I was a kid. I wrestled and I was never great. I had to work so hard just to be like average, you know? So I feel like just the working hard, the being consistent and knowing that it just takes like showing up like every day and just chipping away just inch by inch by inch by inch. And eventually you can get to where you want to go. So I think that's helped me out a lot, and not being afraid to fail. I mean, in wrestling practice, I used to get smashed, you know, like beat up. And my goal was like, all right, well, I can't beat these people up, but maybe I can take a beating really well. So I would practice on how to just get beat up and be able to go to practice the next day. And eventually you can start doing your own ass whoopings eventually, you know, but it took a lot of thrashings. So I think that helps me in trail running because it's the whole time. Like I'm just getting throttled most of the time and I'm like not scared. I'm okay with it. I'm enjoying being outside. I'm doing something that like 12-year-old Zach maybe only dreamed of. So it's pretty sick to just to be out there and do something and hang out with a really cool group of people.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect combo.
I think the fear of failure is probably the number one thing that holds people back.
Yeah.
You know, and to try without that fear is super vulnerable because you're probably going to fail, you know, and it's vulnerable to try your best and then still fail, you know, but it's really cool to have that resilience to not care.
Yeah.
You know,
well, showing up, not showing up is failing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anything else? I mean, you just put one foot in front of the other and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
But not coming to the table and not coming to the line, that's failure.
Yeah. So what would you tell a younger you? You know, you've gone through a lot of transformations. What would you tell a younger you that is struggling?
Man. It's going to work out, dude. Keep hanging in there. I don't know. Like, kindness, I think, is a superpower. And I think I would just tell myself to be kinder to myself because I've created this, like, pressure chamber of, like, rigidness and, like, tension. And, like, I just – things break, you know, like – body parts break and like spirits break. And I think I was just too rigid and just wanted things in a way that wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
You know?
And what does being kinder to yourself look like?
Like self-talk, you know, like we talk to ourselves, especially when we're out there running. And I'm like, I noticed this in my races this year. So I'm like so kind to myself. I'm like, come on, man. Like you're doing so good. And like, in these like low moments, I'm just like really positive and I'm never like, oh, you suck. Like, why can't you do this? So just like, even in those moments of your self-talk to just say nice things because you're doing the best you can, you know, and like saying terrible shit to yourself isn't going to make it any better, you know? So, and that's something I learned. Like I used to be like hideous to myself, you know, and like, especially coming from a sport where you had to like cut weight and like, do your muscles stand out enough? Are you like ripped enough?
I also wrestled, by the way.
No way.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
In Hawaii?
In Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah.
What'd you think? Like your whole life? Did you do it or?
No, I did it.
Well, no wonder you're a good trail runner, right? It helps.
Well, I was running before and then I was doing basketball in the off season because it's cross country. There's no indoor in Hawaii. It was just cross country. A different sport and then track. And then I just, you know, did it for 2 years.
Sick.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was, I hated it and I also loved it. And I also got beat up every single day.
Yeah.
Because I'm mostly wrestling boys.
Totally.
You know,
it's tough. It's the toughest sport.
Yeah.
It's mentally tough. There's so many things you have to do. Like you're like cutting weight, at least back when I wrestled.
And cutting weight was the worst.
Brutal.
I took a ton of laxatives once.
Yeah, I don't know how I even trained without either. I'd be going like 3 or 4 days without eating.
Yep.
And going to practice, and I'm like, dude, what were you doing?
I felt drunk all the time.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Eating rice cakes, which are not even great for you.
I was just eating melons.
Melons.
Yeah.
I was a rice cake person.
Yeah. Too dry.
And I would blend up ice, and like eat a slushy, like a water slushy.
I wasn't even drinking water.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, in the last 2 days.
That's
just spitting in a water bottle.
Oh, yeah. I've done that as well.
Yeah.
So I don't miss those days.
Yeah.
So running to me is like, oh, nobody's trying to beat me up. I don't have to cut weight. Well, I mean, I have to monitor my weight because of my leg, but, you know, it's a little bit more, I have more fun.
Yeah. That's good. I have more fun running than I did wrestling, too. So before the podcast, you talked about some of the barriers as an adaptive athlete. Like, as you said, your leg is molded to you, so you have to really monitor your weight, which, you know, my weight fluctuates like crazy.
Yeah.
Depending on whether I'm training or not. And that's a huge barrier for someone. You've mentioned that you've had a lot of privilege in your life by always having prosthetics available. So what would you tell an adaptive athlete? What advice would you give them that's trying to break into the sport but doesn't have the resources?
Move to Australia.
Yeah. But in all seriousness.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky situation to navigate. And I think in America, nonprofits exist to kind of supplement what the healthcare system doesn't do. You know, I read something the other day, or my wife told me this, where like GoFundMe is the third largest insurance provider in the country because...
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing.
People raise money on there for their health, but there's nonprofits out there that exist that will get give you adaptive equipment. There's like grant processes. They can help you acquire like a running blade or a running knee or a racing wheelchair. Or like this year I applied for a grant for forearm crutches called side sticks that I'm going to use when I mountaineer. So when I go down and descend, it's a little bit easier on my joint. And those are $2,000 and insurance doesn't cover it. So there's a lot of nonprofits out there that will help you in that journey. You just got to find them and apply for the grants and piece them together.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is a job.
It's a job.
It's like so difficult.
It's very difficult, especially for somebody that's new to the scene.
Yeah.
It's a lot of overwhelming information. My arms just got amputated or my legs just amputated. Oh my gosh. So luckily there's people like me out there. You can just message us. Like I feel like our adaptive community is like really cool. And people are always sharing like, oh, this worked for me or this organization has a grant opening in November. So just reach out to the community and ask.
So cool. So cool. And I'm assuming that support system didn't exist not too long ago.
It did not. Yeah. I mean, I feel like in the day and age of social media, there's way more support. So there's like downfalls to social media, but also cool things because you have more access to different things and different programs than like when I was a kid, I went to the Shriners Hospital and got a leg. And, you know, they took care of me from the time I was like 1 to 18. And that's all I knew. I didn't, you know anything else. But now, you know, if you're missing a leg, I'm not saying it's like the golden time to be an amputee, but there's a lot of cool stuff out there.
Yeah. You can say it's a golden time
to be an amputee. I feel like the world that we're trying to create right now is going to be like epic for the generation behind us.
Yeah.
They're going to have like Paralympians are going to be like fully sponsored, able to live, make a career, not trying to piece together sponsorships, like properly sponsored athletes that have an opportunity to do something with their life.
That's amazing. I'm sure that was scary quitting your job to become a professional athlete.
It's scary, but I really believed it.
Yeah.
You know, like at this point in my life, you know, by like, you know, seeing Fred in the Redwoods, my shaman friend, and going to India and like just really trusting in the journey, I just knew. I'm like, I have to do this to fail. I mean, if I don't try to fail, then how am I going to be satisfied in my life?
Yeah.
So I could have failed. I mean, and, you know, but I had to figure it out.
Yeah. That's really incredible. So we're coming to an end here, and I love this question for all my guests because, it makes them think a little bit. What's something that you're proud of that you may have not talked about before that, you know, maybe you know, it doesn't necessarily apply to running, but something that you're really proud of?
I think I'm proud of being vulnerable in my life as opposed to like in my 20s, you want to like appear strong or like a tough person. So you don't show emotion. You never talk about maybe being injured or having depression or whatever's going on in life. And I think flipping that switch in my mid-30s to where I could be vulnerable and have more authentic connections with people and a more pleasurable experience as a human being. So
that's amazing. I do think that is a superpower and it's really, really hard.
It is really hard.
Yeah, and super scary.
But most things that are worth the reward are hard.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's true. I mean, pretty much anything.
Yeah.
Anything worth something is hard.
And vulnerability is right up there with all of them.
Yeah. Hear that? Be vulnerable.
Yeah, we call
it. Do hard things.
We call it doing work on the edge. So you're like on the edge of things and it's scary on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, but that's where a lot of the magic happens and a lot of like new perspectives and you can like reprogram yourself to think differently about stuff.
Yeah. Right before this podcast, I was scrolling Strava, as one does, and Mario Frijole posted this quote, and I don't know who the quote's by, so sorry. I'll find out. But it was, your potential isn't comfortable. Mm. And I loved that. And because it's true. It's like so true. And the potential is always uncomfortable.
Totally.
Sometimes excruciating. Yeah. And that's true. Like vulnerability is sometimes literally excruciating.
It really is.
Yeah.
And those are the moments where you can be kind to yourself.
True. True. Even if like others aren't kind to you when you're expressing it. Because that, it's often met with that, you know? Cool. Well, this has been a blast. Do you have any last words?
I'm excited to be at TRE, and excited to connect with everybody, and I'm looking forward to what's to come in 2024.
Woohoo! Thanks so much, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Be rad out.